Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Ray Van Ness to the podcast. Dr. Van Ness serves as professor of biblical studies at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. He and his wife, Tammy, have six children, ages 20 to 9. He has authored or edited 8 books, and it's a delight to welcome him to Preaching and Preachers. Dr. Van Ness, so good to have you today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And look, I've been so looking forward to this conversation, getting a visit with you about the preacher and the biblical languages. And even saying that probably elicits some fear and trembling in some listeners, perhaps a sense of guilt that our languages aren't as strong as they should be. But I want the next 20, 25 minutes or so to be not about you inflicting pastors and preachers listening about what they should be doing or could be doing, but try to make it encouraging and helpful and instructive to strengthen our collective pulpit ministries. Before we get into the heart of the conversation, though, tell us a little about yourself. What's new with you and your family and your ministry at Union University? And tell us what's new with you.
Sure. Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on. What's new for my family is probably we now have 2 of our sons students at Union, and so navigating that. My second son's a freshman, so even while I've been here, I've been navigating registration for the next semester.
Oh, my.
And then my wife has returned to teaching in the classroom. And
is that at Union or school?
In sixth grade class in the area. She has a great ministry with that, reaching a lot of kids in that way. So that's encouraging. Then at Union, with 2017 coming up, with the anniversary of the Reformation, the Center for Biblical Studies that I direct, we're hosting a big event March 9 to 11, looking at how the Reformation continues to shape the world as we know it. So a lot of things going on with that that have come together nicely.
And you're a native Tennessean, right?
That's right.
So you're there at Union, near where you're from, and you went a long way from Union, though. You studied at Aberdeen.
That's right.
How did you find yourself in Aberdeen?
Well, I ended up at Trinity doing my master's work there, and some of my professors had gone to Aberdeen. Grant Osborne was one of them, and he encouraged me to think about that. I was thinking about the pastoral epistles and discovered that Howard Marshall was working on those. So that kind of came together, and there we went.
Well, that's tremendous. We're thankful for your ministry at Union and beyond Union to so many. And just grateful to have the conversation with you today. So we're talking about the preacher and the biblical languages. Let me begin by just asking you, how did you develop a love for the languages?
That's a great question. I like that question because it found me. I was rolling along. I was a student at Union, so my wife and I are both graduates of Union. And I knew from high school that I had an interest in languages. So Greek was offered, and so I should take it. But it was really in that first year class that I just became fascinated. And part of it was, unlike how we teach it now, you didn't look at any New Testament real verses until later on. You're doing Jack and Jill went up the hill equivalents.
Right.
But then when they let us look at a verse, and I saw that, and I thought, this is what it looked like when the Apostle John, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, put pen to paper or papyrus and wrote it out. This is what it looked like. And that sense of immediacy with the text is part of what grabbed me.
Mm. And so that classroom to today, you spent a lot of time in the Greek New Testament. And man, I'm glad you have. So I'm curious, your line from Union to Aberdeen, you mentioned, of course, the famous I. Howard Marshall, who passed away, a little over a year ago now?
Yes, we're coming up on the year anniversary.
Coming up on a year.
December.
And I'm curious, what was his influence like on you?
Yeah, that's another great question. I first met him at an ETS. I had planned to go, and he was here, so we got to meet. And it was interesting, a number of people commented on when they would meet him, knowing he had written so many books and so smart, and then you meet this small, soft-spoken man. It was kind of striking. But it was a delight to study with him, not only because of his brilliance, but because of a Christ-like humility that really pervaded what he did. I can remember it took him probably a year to get me to call him Howard. when he wrote back in the emails calling me Reverend Van Ness, then I acquiesced. But he made a point too. he would correct my preposition because I would say that I was studying under him. And he said, no one's allowed to do that here, but you may study with me.
Wow.
And he was so gracious. He would have dinner in our home, and too many stories to take up the time, I could tell there, but I can remember in particular him sitting across from me, and we're talking. He began to mention another New Testament scholar, and just to say, I'm so impressed with him. I don't understand how he produces so much quality material. And I was just looking at him thinking, you produce more than he does.
Right.
But you're impressed with him, and you've been around. You know when somebody's doing that to kind of fish out a compliment.
Right.
He was really self-unaware in the best sense of the term. So the opportunity to study and learn information, but then see that lived out in that kind of way.
And more specifically, your interest in the pastoral epistles. Did you go to Aberdeen intending to focus on the pastoral epistles?
And, I did.
And specifically, that interest drew you to Dr. Marshall. And so you're there. And I love the pastoral epistles. They were central to my own call to ministry. Mm-hmm. And I read through the pastoral ministry this day at least once a month.
Wow.
Just those three books. And so I'm curious about your particular interest in the pastoral epistles. What drew you to the pastoral epistles?
Yes. Pastoral ministry drew me to the pastoral epistles. While I was doing my master's work at Trinity, I was pastoring Southern Baptist Church in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And I was getting to the point where I had to figure out what I was going to write a master's thesis on. And I had all these ideas and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I happened to be preaching through Titus. I don't remember why I had chosen that, but I was preaching through Titus, and I was working on the text, and I began to say, well, I think I see something here in the flow of the text, working in the Greek text, that I'm not seeing in the commentaries that interest me. And so coming out of the sermon series came the idea for a master's level thesis, and then after I'd done that, then the thought was, well, hey, I'd like to keep pursuing this idea a little bit further in doctoral work.
There you have it. Well, this isn't about me, but I continually go back to the pastoral epistles, and I find it tragic when ministers are not familiar with the pastoral epistles, not conversant with the pastoral epistles, and not just tragic in a sense of thinking less of them or feeling as though they're being irresponsible, but I find it tragic in knowing what they're missing out on.
Right.
Knowing what they're missing out on.
Mm-hmm. Great resources.
Yeah, it's just there, and it's so rich. Okay, so the biblical languages, the pastoral epistles. So let me ask you this question. For pastors and preachers listening to this podcast, why study the languages?
Yes. One way I put it is you really should not study the biblical languages unless the biblical text is important. But if the biblical text is important, then it matters to get as close to it as you can. And the point, as you alluded earlier, is not to shame anybody. And folks can point to this person or that person who was used greatly and didn't have as much access. But I don't know of any who didn't say along the way, I got as much as I could. I wish I could have gotten more. And we live in a day with such amazing access that if we value the Word of God, then we need to try to get as close to that text as we can and study as much as we can. Not because we're going to correct all the translations that are out there. We have good translations. But we want to just get as close as we can. I also illustrate it by saying if you met a girl, somebody, you know, you decide you're going to marry this girl, and she wasn't a native English speaker, you'd want to know her heart language. Well, the heart language of the Bible are these two biblical languages, and then Aramaic. And God is sovereign, and He chose to give them to us this way. So there's something to this. I would hope people are drawn to it. We can't really drive folks to it. You just be relying on guilt, and that's not going to get us far. But if we see the value, if we see the preciousness of it, then everything we can get is going to be good. And again, so then we're not dealing with shame. We're just saying, what more can I do? How further steps can I take?
So many young men who pastor, they go to seminary, they first semester show up, and they have baby Greek. It's intimidating. It's challenging. It keeps them up at night. They struggle. They kind of manage to work their way through it, and they get through it. And in hindsight, it may have even felt kind of like a seminary hazing experience.
Right.
And but part of them feels like, you know, they wish they could stay fresh. They wish they could spend time in the Greek text, but hospital visits happen and urgencies happen and their wife has a baby and these complexities come in. So they find themselves kind of sitting atop a melting iceberg of Greek knowledge.
Right.
What do you say to that pastor that lives with a sense of guilt, wishing he had more, wishing he was better versed, wishing he was as strong as he was when he was taking exegesis classes in seminary?
Right. Well, I would say we all deal with this, right? Life comes at us and we're not able to do all the things we want to do. But one thing I've learned along the way, again, just life, is there are various things I look at and say, wow, I wish I was better at, I wish I was doing more of, and then 5 years later, I'm still wishing I was doing more of. But we'll tend to wait until we can make huge strides before we do anything, and that means we never do anything. So the thing to do is just to start chipping away, just a little bit. So I really love the UBS Reader's Greek New Testament because it has the standard text, and then it has the more difficult forms translated at the bottom of the page. That's what I have by my bedside in order just to read. Just start reading. If somebody says, you know, and I know I've been in pastoral ministry, and I've heard professors who say you should study 40 hours for every sermon, and we're all looking going, does he do math?
Right.
but just whatever it is, do as much as you could with it and read. I think reading every day, again, just a little bit even, is good, and you can begin to get the feel of it. And that UBS Readers thing is great. If people have software things where you can put your cursor over it and read, then that's helpful. And you've got to fight discouragement because it'll come in saying, well, you looked up every word. You didn't do anything. That's not true. You did a lot. You've looked at it. You're getting a sense of it. And somebody said, well, I've been doing this 2 weeks. I don't feel like I know more than I did. No. We're thinking 2 years, 20 years, 40 years. We're trying to look long haul and let this slowly seep into our souls.
You know, I remember many years ago hearing John Piper say that, I believe he had like a January sabbatical or February sabbatical, and making the comment that that sabbatical every year was his attempt to learn Hebrew. And he would every year would spend time trying to learn or relearn Hebrew. You know, I wonder at the seminary level or the Christian college level that you serve in at Union, what stewardship responsibility does the professor have? And here's what I mean by that. I don't think any professor, I never had a professor in Greek or Hebrew that I felt like they were being capricious or just trying to be difficult because it was fun to be cruel and difficult. Okay. I never had that. But at the same time, what stewardship does the professor have for this not to be shock therapy that where students are just dying to make a passing grade to get out of it? Mm-hmm. And the shock theory, again, not because of cruelty on behalf of the professor, perhaps, but feeling as though I got to cram this all into the next 3 months or this semester and then the next semester and trying to cram and force a student and trying to serve the church, trying to serve the student. All of this is honorable and noble. But is there a sense in which if you take that approach and you're so intense that you have students leave the class every semester thinking, I'm so glad I got that behind me. I never want to go through that again in my life.
Right.
If you in some way might be hindering the cause as opposed to helping it.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is tricky, right? Because there are some students who are going to feel like they're overwhelmed if you just give them a little bit of work to do. So I think any good professor has to be a pastor. So you're shepherding this class, right? So anywhere from Gregory the Great to Baxter to wherever, they'll talk about how do you minister to this soul and how do you minister to that soul? So I'll have some students who I will tell, yeah, it's hard. It's time to suck up and learn to work hard, right? Because they haven't had that challenge before. And then you've got the other ones. I'm thinking of one who's pastoring a church, has had a death in the congregation, and has had health problems himself. That's not the same message you give to that student.
Right.
There's a whole different face there. And I think the professor has a responsibility to try, in every class, to help the students see why we're doing this. So I think it's great. So many of the resources we have now are putting us into the biblical text right away instead of doing the farmer saw the poet's daughter. so that when you're doing exercises and you can begin to show just a little bit of where we're going and what this is for, I try to give them some readings along the way that where people are talking about, hey, here's some of the benefit. Because if we don't know the value, we don't work hard on stuff we don't know what the value is. And it's not fair to say, well, you should just know the value. I see my role as teaching the material, and then I am an enticer. I need to entice them to the value of this. And so my prayer every week when we pray before the quiz, I pray in some way about helping us to know you, Lord, through your word, and help us to be a good steward of this. So this integratedness, I think, is key.
That is key. And now I want to come back to something you touched on. You touched on the tools that we have. And it is amazing. I mean, I'm a young guy. I graduated from seminary with my MDiv degree in 2004, so not that long ago. But even what's come along over the past, 12 years or so is truly staggering. I preach conferences in different public contexts of ministry, and it seems like every month I'm before a preacher in a conference or church setting, I'm sitting through a Logos presentation or some type of a language tool presentation. I'm sitting there thinking, that is amazing. like, where was that? And I was teasing one of these presenters a couple months ago. I said, you guys are like one breakthrough away from putting all the seminaries in America out of business. and I joke because, of course, there's many, many reasons and needs for seminaries, and these tools aren't an end-all. But what do you say to the person that says, why do I need to sweat Greek for a year or two or for the rest of my ministry when I can just click, 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 and presto, I have the answer that I need?
Yeah. I had this conversation the other day. As you might imagine, it's a fairly regular conversation. And it's basically, at one level, it's the same question that gets asked, why should I bother with this since I have an English translation? The answer is to say, well, these are great tools, but part of the point is your own discovery. I think it's related to the idea of preaching other people's sermons. Obviously, learn from other people's sermons, draw from them and everything else. But it is the labor of wrestling with the text that shapes you. I use as an example, it's not the main point of this text, but just as an analogy, when Jacob's wrestling with this shadowy figure, I think perhaps a pre-incarnate Christ, mm-hmm. And it's the wrestling, that engaging with God, where he is changed, and that's us. So just the fact that I can get different answers, it's in the wrestling with it. And those answers, that's my answer that I wrote for somebody, or that's somebody else's answer that you wrote for them. You want to be able to engage the conversation and not just take somebody else's answer on these things.
That's good. Very helpful. Very, very well said. A couple more questions. Your time is passing, and I'm enjoying this. I appreciate your heart for ministry and your heart for the languages, Dr. Van Nest. So if we're talking now to the person listening, and they're resonating with this. They appreciate your passion for the languages. They share it. They know that they, not all they ought to be or perhaps desire to be as relates to being an exegete, but they're grateful for what God's given them. They want to take the next step. So they're with you in spirit. What do you say to them about how to stay fresh in the warp and woof of personal life and ministry and all this taking place? Now, you've touched on this already, but flesh that out a bit more. What would you say to the average pastor about how to really stay fresh with languages?
Yeah, I think of a couple of general things and then maybe a couple of specific resources. In general, what I realize about life for myself, whether it's exercise or whether it's a study of something else, I've got to get it into just the regular rhythm of life. So I think getting into the regular rhythm, this reading, just read the Greek New Testament. Whether it's what you're preaching or not, just read a little bit, a couple sentences or whatever else, and let that grow and be having at that. Then, if you're able, and this is a great need and often a great lack for so many pastors, and I know it, but if you're able, if you have any other brother pastors in the area where you can get together. And I've known groups who've done this have said, okay, we're going to decide they're spread out somewhere, but they're close enough to get together. We're going to preach through Titus in this next month. And we agree on how we're going to break it up. We're going to meet once a week and kind of talk about what we did. If there's something like that, because the other thing is if it's just me and nobody else knows whether or not I did the reading I planned to do, there's a good chance I won't. Mm-hmm. But it's accountability, just like what we do with dealing with sin, just like we do, again, with exercise. If somebody else is showing up out there in the morning to run, and they're going to be standing there, if I don't show up in the morning, well, I'm more likely to drag myself out of bed.
Right, or lose a friend.
Yeah, that's right. So if you can get some partnership, and then if you can get into the rhythm. Then resources. I mentioned the UBS Greek Reader's New Testament. There's another one like it that Zondervan puts out, and they're great folks, but it's not as good.
Okay.
It's just not as easy to use. It'd be more complicated without being able to show people why that's the case. And then there's a book, Keeping Your Greek, by Constantine Campbell. Last I saw, you could get it for $5, and it's maybe 100 pages. Very practical. Again, where some professors have been bad is somebody says, okay, what can I do to keep my Greek? And they give you something like, well, just study 10 hours a day. And
right, right.
He's very realistic, very encouraging. So that's my favorite book of that sort. Then there's a new book that I've just been reading by Rodney Whitaker, something like Reading and Enjoying Your Greek New Testament. They'd have to search Amazon, and that may not be the exact phrase, but it's very worshipful. Again, it's just like systematic theology. You know, if it doesn't sing, it's not right. Well, that's the same thing here. If it's got heart to it, then you can stay with it. So I find that helpful. But I think the big thing, like in much of spiritual disciplines, is perseverance. Stay with it and know that it's valuable. We live in a culture, right, that where you need to throw the Hail Mary pass, you need to hit the home run. The Christian life is one with a good bunting game, stealing bases, and a squeeze play every once in a while. So that's how we need to progress.
Mm, very well said. Dr. Van Nest, it's been just a delight to have this conversation with you. I love your heart for the student, for the languages, and for the local church and the ministers of the local church. This is important. This is urgent. And it's for me, it's a reminder of a broader apologetic I give for seminary. Mm-hmm. Occasionally I'll be asked this. Yeah. You know, well, Spurgeon didn't go to seminary.
Right.
Edwards didn't go to seminary. Edwards sort of did. but, you know, somebody didn't go to seminary. Martin Lloyd-Jones didn't go to seminary. And I'll say, yes, there have been glorious exceptions, and praise God for that. In
Absolutely.
Times past, present, and future, glorious exceptions.
Absolutely.
But the reality is, we're not Spurgeons. We're not Martin Lloyd-Joneses.
Right.
And don't let the outlier, the red herring, shape and influence adversely the broader logic for ministry preparation, which is needed.
Absolutely.
Same way with language. There have been great preachers out there that did not know Greek.
Right.
But there have been many great preachers that did know Greek and that was used to make them even greater. Thank you for the biblical. Thank you for the conversation and for your ministry with the biblical languages and all the Lord is doing with and through you at Union University.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.